Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Narchries podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Mein Kampf is a political autobiography and ideological manifesto written by Adolf Hitler during the 1920s, after the failed Beerhahl Putsch and before his rise to power in Germany. This edition, associated with Ralph Mannheim translation and an introduction by Abraham Foxman, is best approached as a historical primary source rather than as a conventional political treatise. The book combines personal grievance, racial theory, propaganda strategy, attacks on parliamentary democracy, and a program for national expansion. Its purpose was not neutral explanation, but persuasion, mobilization, and self-legitimation. For modern readers, its value lies in exposing how extremist ideology can present itself as destiny, national renewal, and moral necessity while normalizing violence and exclusion. The text is disturbing because it shows not only what Hitler believed, but also how those beliefs were organized into a political language capable of attracting followers in a time of crisis. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, autobiography is political self-mythologizing. A major feature of Mein Kampf is the way Hitler converts episodes from his life into a political origin story. The autobiographical material is selective and polemical, presenting childhood, Vienna, wartime service, and post-war disillusionment as stages in the formation of a supposedly awakened nationalist consciousness. This is not memoir in the reflective sense. It is self-mythologizing. Personal frustration is recast as evidence of historical insight, and private resentment becomes proof of political destiny. The method matters because it shows how extremist leaders can use biography to claim authenticity. Hitler repeatedly frames himself as someone who saw through corruption, weakness, and betrayal before others did. That posture allows him to present ideology as discovery rather than invention. The result is a narrative that invites readers to interpret his rise as inevitable and necessary. For critical readers, this dimension is important because it reveals how personal grievance can be fused with public doctrine, creating a political identity that appears emotionally sincere while remaining manipulative and exclusionary. Secondly, racial antisemitism as the organizing principle of the worldview, the central ideological structure of Mein Kampf is racial antisemitism. Hitler does not treat prejudice as a peripheral sentiment. He builds a worldview around the claim that history, culture, politics, and economics are determined by racial struggle. Jews are falsely depicted as the hidden cause of social disorder, political revolution, capitalism, cultural modernity, and national decline. This conspiracy logic is crucial because it gives the text a single explanatory enemy for complex problems. Economic hardship, military defeat, cultural anxiety, and democratic conflict are all redirected toward a dehumanized target. The book thereby turns uncertainty into certainty and frustration into aggression. Its racial thinking also denies the individual moral status of human beings, replacing citizenship and ethical responsibility with collective biological categories. This is one reason the work remains historically significant and morally dangerous. It demonstrates how pseudoscientific language and national panic can be joined to create a doctrine that justifies exclusion, persecution, and ultimately mass violence. Thirdly, propaganda, mass psychology, and the construction of political loyalty, Mein Kampf gives sustained attention to propaganda and the psychology of mass persuasion. Hitler argues that political communication should be simple, repetitive, emotional, and directed toward broad audiences rather than intellectual elites. He treats propaganda not as open debate but as a tool for forming belief, intensifying loyalty, and identifying enemies. This aspect of the book is especially revealing because it shows a deliberate preference for simplification over accuracy. Complexity is treated as a weakness, while slogans and repeated accusations are presented as effective instruments of mobilization. The book also links propaganda to discipline within a movement. A political organization, in this view, must not merely present policies. It must create unity, obedience, and emotional identification with a leader and cause. For modern analysis, this topic is one of the clearest warnings in the text. It illustrates how authoritarian movements use communication to narrow public imagination, reduce pluralism, and transform political disagreement into moralized conflict between insiders and enemies. Fourthly, rejection of liberal democracy and elevation of authoritarian rule. The book repeatedly attacks parliamentary democracy, pluralist politics, compromise, and constitutional restraint. Hitler portrays democratic institutions as weak, fragmented, and vulnerable to manipulation, while presenting authoritarian leadership as decisive and organic. This contrast is misleading but politically effective. By emphasizing crisis, humiliation, and disorder, the text makes ordinary democratic disagreement appear as national decay. It then offers centralized authority as the cure. The political logic is totalitarian because it does not seek limited government or temporary emergency power. It imagines a state organized around ideological unity, hierarchy, obedience, and the subordination of individual rights to a racialized national community. This hostility to liberal democracy is not incidental to the book. It is one of its core mechanisms. It helps explain how the text connects hatred with institutional ambition. The reader sees that the danger is not only extremist belief, but the effort to redesign law, education, citizenship, and public life so that dissent becomes illegitimate and power becomes unaccountable. Lastly, Lebensraum and the militarization of national destiny. Mein Kampf also develops an expansionist foreign policy centered on the idea of Lebensraum, or living space, especially toward Eastern Europe. Hitler presents territorial conquest as a biological and historical necessity, rather than as ordinary state ambition. This framing is important because it transforms aggression into destiny. War is not treated as a tragic failure of politics, but as a legitimate instrument for racial and national renewal. The concept links domestic ideology to external violence. The same racial hierarchy used to define belonging within the nation is extended outward to justify domination over other peoples. The book, therefore, cannot be understood only as a collection of prejudices or complaints. It contains a programmatic connection between race, land, military force, and empire. This aspect stands out in hindsight because later Nazi policy followed many of these broad themes, though not always in a simple one-to-one blueprint. For readers, the lesson is that expansionist ideology often announces itself through claims of necessity, security, and historical right. In conclusion, Mein Kampf should be read only with historical, ethical, and critical distance. It is most relevant for students of 20th century history, political extremism, genocide studies, rhetoric, propaganda, and democratic breakdown. General readers may also benefit from encountering it in a guided or annotated context, especially when trying to understand how extremist movements justify hatred and present authoritarianism as national rescue. Its practical value is not in any advice it offers, but in the warning it provides about ideological simplification, conspiracy thinking, scapegoating, and the erosion of democratic norms. Compared with later histories of Nazism, the book stands out because it is a primary document from the movement itself. It exposes the internal language, ambitions, and resentments of the ideology before it held state power. At the same time, it is repetitive, distorted, hateful, and intellectually crude, which makes careful framing essential. Its significance lies precisely in the gap between its poor quality as argument and its catastrophic historical consequences. Readers should approach it alongside scholarly works on Nazi Germany, anti-Semitism, the Holocaust, and interwar Europe. In that context, it becomes a document for vigilance, a record of how violent ideas can be normalized when political crisis, resentment, propaganda, and institutional weakness converge. If you would like to support Adolf Hitler, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.